Ah, mmm. The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.
Hey everyone, this is Red Leg Nation Radio. I'm Chad Dotson. Welcome back. With me today is our good friend, not his first go-round on this podcast, and definitely not going to be his last if I have anything to say about it. It's our buddy Jason Linden. Jason has been an editor at Red Leg Nation for like 40 years or something now.
It's been a long time.
It has been a long time.
And I was thinking about that today. I've been writing about baseball for a really long time, and I don't know how that happened.
Believe me, I understand. You turn around and you've been doing it for a decade. It's crazy. Let me go ahead and say now, if you haven't read it yet, I want to talk about it again because it's still one of my favorite things that I've read in the last few years. You got to go to get Jason's book, When the Sparrow Sings. And it's about baseball, but it's a novel. And I know we talked about it, I think, the last time you were here, but you want to just briefly throw that out there right here on the top so maybe we can go get people to...
Sure. I'll always promote everything, including my year-old book. I don't know. When the Sparrow Sings basically is about a... guy, this gives away nothing because it happens on the first like page, who is a very good pitcher on a team that's going to be in the World Series. And right before the World Series is supposed to begin, his dad dies in a car accident. And then, the question theoretically is, do you pitch or not? But of course he has to pitch. And so then basically the whole novel takes place over the course of that game that he's pitching. And you get a lot of his like kind of strained relationship with his dad and stuff. And the thing I always like to throw out about it, because I can, is that Joe Posnanski likes it.
That's so big. That's huge.
Yeah. That's my synopsis.
Excellent. Yeah. No, if for some reason you've been reading Red Leg Nation and haven't, or listened to the podcast and haven't gone and read that yet, you got to get it. So, When the Sparrow Sings, Jason Linden. Now let's get to the podcast, Jason. How you been?
I've been doing all right. How have you been, Chad?
Enjoying this red season like you would not believe.
They're so good. I mean, you think it's going to be a sweep in the World Series, right?
Probably. If we the Reds will get swept. it's been a disaster, but I think, I'm not going to speak for you, but I think you sort of share the way I have. It's sort of a lovable mess in the sense that, the bullpen, you just got to laugh at it because it's awful. But they're also, you can start to see some of the threads of this so-called rebuilding, and you can squint a little bit and see how this might fall into place and that might fall into place. And to me, there's some value in that. We knew the Reds weren't going to compete. So at least there are some interesting storylines that we can follow. I've still been watching every game just about.
Yeah, it's a terrible, terrible team, but we knew it was going to be a terrible team, which is way better than like last year when everybody was like, "Oh, maybe they'll be pretty good," and then they were terrible. Knowing they're going to be bad, and it's like, well, we're just going to throw garbage out there for the first half of the season, and then we'll start to call up some of the young guys, and maybe it'll get a little better. That's a little easier to swallow then. Oh, this team is supposed to make the playoffs. Oh, wait, no, they're in last place.
Right, and they lost 98 last year, may lose 98 again this year or more. They were on pace to lose 111 at one point here the last couple weeks, although they have been resurgent here lately. I think that this is really a mirror image of last season in the sense that, like you said, last year they tried to pretend, first of all, that they could compete, and then at the beginning of the year, they had the Cuetos and the Mike Leakes and all these guys. And the second half was a time when we saw, you started 78 rookie pitchers in a row. That may be hyperbole, but it's close.
I don't think that's really hyperbole. That's actually, I think, really close to how many starts in a row by rookie pitchers.
Well, right, number of starts absolutely was true. This year, though, maybe second half, there's a little bit more hope that we'll get to see some things that are interesting as opposed to last year, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. A lot of hope. I'm especially excited for Cody Reed.
You've been banging the drum for Cody Reed here lately.
I have. I through I suppose, you know, got a bit of good luck. Red Leg Nation got a press pass to Louisville Bats games this year. And I've been able to go and watch them quite a bit because I'm the one who got the press pass since I'm lucky enough to live in Louisville. And boy, he's really good.
That's one way to put it.
You know, I mean, I know it's AAA, right? And AAA is not the majors. But boy, when I've seen him, you know, one of the things I've talked to some people about just kind of on text messages and stuff that I've noticed watching this many minor league games is you can tell the guys who don't really belong in AAA. Like, they just kind of look better than everybody else. And every time he's on the field, Cody Reed looks better than everybody else. And that's not just a sentiment I have. You know, I've talked to other people up in the press box. They feel that way. You know, I've heard people in the Bats organization say that you know, he comes out and pitches and you know what's going on. And, you know, maybe the most – certainly he's had some really wonderful dominant starts. I saw him take a no-hitter to the, I think, the seventh one time I went out. I was in the stands with my kids that day. But there was a road trip start where he went out and he just got slaughtered in the first inning. He gave up a grand slam and 5 runs total in the first inning. And then he came out and he pitched 5 more innings and struck out 7, and I believe he faced the minimum. So what happened was he went down and Ted Power, the pitching coach, was like, hey, you need to make this adjustment. And he made it and came out and dominated. So he didn't get rattled. He had a bad inning like pitchers will have from time to time. And then he was just like, no, I'm fine now, and just destroyed the opposition for the rest of the game. So Cody Reed, I'm very excited. I think Cody Reed is much, much better than Robert Stevenson, which is not to say anything bad about Stevenson. I just think I think Cody Reed actually has the potential to be a Johnny Cueto type picture.
Johnny Cueto, that name sounds familiar. Oh, that's who they traded to get Cody Reed, among others. And that trade looks better and better every day, even though we all love Cueto.
I'll miss John Cueto until I die. That's just all there is to it.
No question. One of the Cueto is and will be one of the best pitchers that we're ever going to see in a Reds uniform during our lifetimes. What I love about Reed is that he just turned 23. He displays that maturity that you're talking about and sort of an understanding of the game. He's been young for his level at every level. And liable to be at age 23 in the major leagues very soon, maybe for the rest of, you know, for good.
I think so. Once he calls up, I don't think gets called up. I don't think he's going anywhere. Who are they going to throw out there?
The Reds stink, but if you can't get excited about the possibility that we're going to see Cody Reed and Robert Stevenson, who you just mentioned, and I know it's you thought when you said it sounded a little bit like a criticism. I know it's not. Stevenson is a great prospect as well and is doing very well at AAA as well. Both those guys could be up. I mean, you could be talking about the top two in your rotation, or at least two of the top three or so, for the next 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, it's just that's...
Yeah. I think Stevenson, from what I've seen of him, and I haven't seen him as much as I've seen Cody Reed, and people who watch just the Reds have seen him for a couple starts this year. I think he has the potential to be very good, but I think control is a little bit more of an issue for him. The most recent start I saw him, he had he just got shelled. It was awful. He couldn't find the plate half the time. But we found out later from the Shields after the game that he had a cut finger that he didn't tell anybody about. So on his pitching hand.
Right.
So that explained that. But he's had kind of some up and down control issues. He's the kind of pitcher right now where if he comes out and he's in that mode where he's finding the plate, then he's great. And if he's in that mode where he's not, then it's, you know, maybe kind of a little bit of young Randy Johnson time.
Right.
Watch out for the mascot and that kind of thing.
Absolutely. But again, the key word there to me that I hear is young. I mean, you know, he's
also 23.
Yeah, also 23 years old. And so those are two guys. And then when you think those guys are going to be in your rotation probably the second half of the year, maybe very soon for both of them, Anthony DeSclafani back, Homer Bailey back. That's a pretty good group of four pitchers that the Reds have not had up to this point.
Yeah, Cody Reed right now is on, I don't know if this is on purpose or just has worked out so worked out as such, but he's currently on the same starting schedule as one Alfredo Simon. So, you know, whenever they decide they want to end that experiment, they can call Cody Reed up that day to take his place.
I can't imagine why they'd want to replace Alfredo Simon in the rotation with Cody Reed. That doesn't make any sense. Simon has been spectacular for the Reds this year with that 9.11 ERA. Yeah, I know. That's the lowest it's been in a while, though, actually. So, but it's not that bad. His FIP is 7.19. So it's not quite as bad as it looks.
So he hasn't actually he's actually only an 8 runs per 9 inning pitcher.
Exactly. Yeah. So come on, let's how about we not speak of him again? The guy I do want to talk about is a guy that I had really had high hopes would be in the mix for that number 1, number 2. Still have high hopes that it might be the case. But it's Rizel Iglesias who's on the disabled list right now, and the Reds announced this past week that when he comes back this year, Iglesias is going to work out of the bullpen. And that makes me unhappy in one sense, that I don't want him to get stuck in the bullpen for no good reason. But on the other hand, there may be a very good reason, which is that his shoulder just can't handle the rigors of starting. I hope that's not the case. But we did know that some of these young guys, when it all shook out, would end up being in the bullpen. I fear that that's going to be Iglesias, even though he has the stuff in my mind to be a number one starter.
That's how I feel. I mean, he's the one, you know, of that crop, other than maybe Cody Reed, who I was the most excited about.
Oh, me too, yes.
And, I mean, you know, when you see him pitch, it's you see why you're excited. But, you know, in Cuba, right, he was a reliever. So the Reds were kind of trying something with the conversion to starting pitcher. And so that might not end up working out for them, which would be too bad. On the other hand, you know, eventually they're going to need the bullpen to occasionally record an inning in which the opponent does not score. So
maybe. Well, and you know, with his stuff, you're talking about closer material as well, if that happens to be the case.
Yeah,
so
certainly. I mean, I think he'll come back to the bullpen, and probably any time the Reds have a lead in the eighth or ninth, here it comes.
Well, you got a Cuban with all kinds of talent that could be a number one starter that they send in the bullpen, and I start, you know, I get this pain in my temple and start twitching because I'm still upset about Aroldis. But here, there's probably a much better if that's what happens.
I agree, and I think the people who were responsible for what happened with Chapman are no longer really with the organization. And so I think that, or at least not in the position where to make that happen. So the Reds, as far as I can tell, have been pretty open about what's going on with Iglesias, and it makes a lot more sense to me than anything with Chapman ever did.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And I can't criticize. I mean, I love criticizing, but this particular instance, I really want Iglesias to be a starter just because he's so good. I love watching him pitch. He reminds me, not really in the way he pitches, well, in one way, of Bronson Arroyo, because I just used to love watching Arroyo, the way he would change his arm angles and change speeds. Iglesias is kind of like that with actual real stuff, you know, so he was going to be fun to watch. He's still going to be fun to watch. I hope the shoulder can hold up, bullpen or starter, either way. So those are some pretty good reasons to be excited about the second half and then on into the next few years.
Well, and then tomorrow, right, we've got Desclafani back.
Disco comes back. Disco is back.
So that's good news. And I saw his second-to-last rehab stat, rehab start with Louisville, and right. Got to talk to him a little bit after, and he looked really sharp. You know, really... really good. Good job changing speeds. He hit 97 on the radar gun.
That's not bad.
Just with one pitch. He had three pitches that went above 94. He had a 97, a 96, a 95. And he sat around 94, which is still a bit faster than he was last year.
Oh, listen, sitting 94, that's fantastic as far as I'm concerned.
He looked really good. So I'm excited to have him back in the Reds rotation. That should be, you know, every 5 days. No reason to fear, at least about the starting pitching.
Right. Yeah, and you know, people forget what a sort of a revelation he was at times last year. You could see at times this guy's got it. I mean, he can be a legit. He's probably not a number one starter material, but I mean, this is a guy that can be a serious contributor in the next good Reds rotation, whenever that is.
He's I think a very solid sort of number three type starter. You know, I wrote a post a while ago. And I stand by this, saying that Homer Bailey, by the end of the year, may be the fifth best pitcher in the rotation.
if Iglesias were starting, I think probably, I mean, I guess there's a question about it, but that's not out on too much of a limb.
If things worked out, if guys performed to their potential, I don't have any question in my mind. Really, I'm probably hyping him too much at this point, but I feel like Reed is going to be better than Bailey. Iglesias, I think we all understand why it would be. And then you've got Desclafani and Stevenson, and it's like, well, you can kind of lump them in a group with Bailey almost, And it's one of those things where it's like, I felt like for a number of years, Reds fans really didn't appropriately appreciate Mike Leake because he was the fifth best pitcher on the team, but he would have been the third best pitcher on a lot of other quite good teams. And I think, it's that we're about to have another one of those crops. And, if these guys don't work out, it's not like they don't have 17 other pitching prospects down there. So surely they can cobble together a good starting rotation over the next couple of years.
Absolutely. Yeah. We've not even talked about guys like Amir Garrett. I mean, there's a really, really good scenario you can imagine and really not be too far off the mark where you could list out five really nice starting pitchers. And then you talk about guys like Iglesias and Lorenzen in the bullpen. That changes the way that bullpen looks. And all of a sudden, your pitching staff's in pretty good shape for the next few years.
Finnegan's probably destined for the bullpen eventually.
Finnegan, hadn't you mentioned him? He's been fantastic.
John Lamb, who is, certainly not, he's not a world beater, but you don't mind him as a middle innings guy at all.
No, absolutely. I mean, Lamb could work his way to be the fourth or fifth guy in the rotation,
So much potential in the starting rotation. So much potential, I think.
Oh, it's the single biggest reason to be optimistic about this team's future. I think they really did a good job at Walt Jocka. You got to give him credit in some respects in turning over some of these guys they had to trade into legit pitchers. Now, what are they going to do on the offensive side? That's going to remain to be seen. There are a lot more holes to fill there, a lot more questions. But
and I will also, while we're kind of talking about it, give kudos to the Reds for once for seeming to really stick to a plan, which was this year we're not going to worry about winning. We're going to worry about reloading or whatever for the next couple of years. And they've done that. The Reds have been bad.
Right. They didn't panic during that 11-game losing streak.
Right, they weren't like, we've got to bring some guys up. Well, let's promote the prospects so that they're winning. I know some Reds fans got really out of joint about it, but I don't care. I just don't care. If they're gonna stink, let them stink. It's not like they're gonna get anywhere near the playoffs. I'd much rather they make sacrifices this year to be really good next year instead of pull some guys in and okay, maybe we win 74 this year and 80 next year. No. Win 60 this year and 85 next year. Not that it'll work that way, but I feel like that's sort of more their approach, which I'm happy about.
Oh, me too. No question. It wasn't that long ago. You think about Homer Bailey's first start when his debut. It was a bad team, and they kind of maybe more PR than just about anything else, and brought him up when maybe he wasn't completely ready.
Well, and there was that whole decade, right, where. Where they tried to sell it like it was going to be a good team, and the best they could ever manage was mediocre, because they never dedicated themselves to really, letting that sort of talent grow when it needed to grow.
Right. Addressing the fundamental problems that caused them to be non-competitive, and you hope they're gonna. The first term I'd like to use, because of all things, until we get an NBA team in Cincinnati, I'm a Philadelphia 76ers fan, and trust the process has been their motto until they panicked and fired their GM. He forced him to resign, basically. So far the Reds are trusting the process, though. Whatever, I don't know if it's the right plan that they've laid out. I don't know if it's going to work, but they are sticking to it so far, and I think it's got as good a chance as anything else that this organization is likely to do. It's got as good a chance of success. I think so far, so good.
I agree. So far, so good.
Now, the question is going to be, how do you fill in some of these spots on the offensive side of the ledger that are going to be problems for the next few years? Jesse Winker is maybe going to be up. Jose Peraza might be a player. Other than that, not a whole lot waiting in the wings in the minors.
We do have... Philip Irvin coming eventually. He seems to have, I've kind of been watching him closely. He's just some prospect I happened to get interested in a few years ago. And he and Winker both had that same wrist injury, that one that Jay Bruce had a few years back that just kind of kills your power for a while.
Yeah.
Irvin's power has really come back. I always tell people when they look at his numbers, that league, that AA league that he plays in, and Doug Gray can tell you all about this, but it really is hard on, it's a really pitching heavy league with the stadiums. So you can't pay attention to batting average at all. But if you look at him relative to his league, he's really, really tearing it up. And I'm kind of waiting for him to get promoted to Louisville so I can watch him. But he's, I think he's a potential outfield solution as well coming. Though he's, you know, I think a year older than Winker and a little bit behind Winker. So there's an extra asterisk there, certainly. But there's at least some potential there. But yeah, you're right. Other than that, there's not too much in the system hitting-wise. Especially the spot that I've been really scared of lately, since it looks like Mesoraco is probably... let's put it this way. I don't think you can count on Mesoraco as an everyday player at this point.
A shame because, and I'm sorry to interrupt you there, but that was a position that we sort of had marked down as being one that was set for the next few years.
Yeah, and now it looks like a black hole for the next few years, which is a scary thing.
It is. It's unfortunate because, well, we all love Mesoraco.
Yeah, yeah.
What do you think about Adam Duvall? I know he's the flavor of the month, and he has been fantastic. I have not one complaint about Adam Duvall right now. But
I do.
Well, I do have a complaint, actually. And I'll let you make that complaint. But
yeah,
it's hard to complain right now because he's doing so many other things well.
He's hitting so many home runs, and he does look so good out there in left. And the numbers back it up that it is hard. But and I also know that I'm sure you know exactly what my issue is with Adam Duvall, because I think we've talked about it on Twitter. Yeah, he doesn't walk any, and he doesn't walk any in an historic kind of way. Like, I've been staring and staring and staring at the numbers, and you can't walk as little as Adam Duvall walks and be a good hitter in the long term. It's not possible. No one has. He's either entirely unique in the history of Major League Baseball, or he's Wile E. Coyote, who's run off the cliff and hasn't looked down yet.
Right. And what concerns me is that, we could be talking small sample size. Maybe, his plate discipline is not as bad as it looks because it's just a couple months. But then you start to drill down a little bit, and he's swinging at a lot of pitches outside the zone. But he's I'm going to have to see if I can remember this correctly, but he's had fewer pitches thrown to him out of the zone than any other Red, I think. So
yeah, he's getting plenty of pitches in the strike zone, but he's still swinging at things out of the zone. Which means, basically, I assume that, he's still relatively new, and pitchers haven't figured out that they don't have to throw him strikes yet. The thing about, you said that maybe we're dealing with small sample size with his walk rate. Maybe, but the thing that's scary is that his minor league numbers aren't that much better in that category. Like, they're a little better, like you would expect minor league numbers to be, but not in a, oh, wow, this is something weird going on here. I'm scared about Adam Duvall. I think people are getting. As with any Reds player, I hope that he continues to be a wonderful player forever. I hope he hits a million home runs, and I don't care if he walks 1% of the time. If he hits 80 home runs, great, cool. But I don't think it's particularly likely, and I think people are getting more excited than his performance merits because it has been such an exciting sort of little period there.
Sure. And you heard it here first. Jason Linden right here on Red Leg Nation Radio said that it's possible that Adam Duvall could hit 80 home runs. I heard it. what surprised me about Adam Duvall, obviously the home runs didn't really surprise me that much because he's always been a power hitter. 611 slugging percentage, that's going to be difficult to sustain.
Yeah.
But his reputation was as a hack with the glove. And by every measure, including the eye test, he's actually doing a pretty good job out in left field. And that really surprised me because I did not expect that.
Well, it was as a hack with the glove at third base, right? Hadn't
exactly,
he been primarily a third baseman in the minors? And then they finally decided, oh, wait, no, you can't actually do that. So we're going to let you play the outfield. He's been, I think, a lot better out there than anybody expected him to be. And so if he can keep it up, then cool.
Well, that provides some value, and then if he regresses to the mean, and with the power, he's not going to get on base a lot, but with the power, maybe maybe he can be an average hitter overall and with good defense, and that's something that's actually better than most of what we've had in left field for the last, well, since Adam Dunn.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So maybe we can live with that for a couple years.
Yeah, I'm just scared because I don't think it's even going to last to the end of the season. I really don't. I've looked at the numbers so many times trying to find a way to say, like, okay, here's the angle that Adam Duvall is working, and I cannot find one.
Well, and one of our other guys at Red Leg Nation, Chris Garber, suggested, I think yesterday on Twitter, you know, it really might not be a bad idea to think about trading Adam Duvall right now, because when is his value going to be higher?
Yeah, well, and I had a similar post on Red Leg Nation and got at least semi-torn apart by it by select people, and it's just like...
That completely skipped my mind, but yes, that was a great post, and it did get a lot of engagement, let us say, about trading him. And I think it's a reasonable, you know, but the other flip side of that is that other teams have to know the same things that we know, you know, that it's not likely to last, but maybe somebody's desperate.
Well, yeah, you know, my kind of thought on that is that, and I don't know, I need to look into this and see, but I have this kind of theory that since 10 teams make the playoffs now, there are so many more buyers than sellers that, you know, what you aim for is some team that's just desperate to improve in any way and just see what you can get. I feel like the handful of sellers ought to be able to ask for more than they used to be able to ask for, because almost everybody's a buyer. The Reds definitely should be sellers this year, relatively speaking. So, you know, if somebody will give you a legit prospect for him, take it. You know, maybe don't take some sort of non-prospect or some C-level prospect. And in that case, see what Duvall does. And, you know, worst case scenario, maybe he's a, you know, fourth outfielder who hits you a home run every now and again.
Yeah.
But if you can get something legit for him as the trade deadline approaches, then do it.
Well, absolutely. I think we all thought he was a throw-in in that Mike Leake trade, basically, Duvall was. I think we all thought, well, if he turns out to be sort of a fourth outfielder with some pop, that's, you know, that's pretty good. That'll help a team. And all-star, yeah, I mean, I don't know, you know, I don't think any of us saw him being in that conversation. But
and speaking of potential Reds all-stars, we ought to talk about Zach Cozart.
Who? Oh, Cozart, right, the shortstop.
Yeah.
Yeah, what a year. My goodness.
Right?
And he keeps hitting. He's actually keeps getting a little better.
Yeah, it's you know, I was a Cozart booster for a really, really long time, and then he just had that horrible year in 2014, and I was looking at his age, and I was like, okay, we've got our useful years out of Zach Cozart. You know, he came up late. He wasn't supposed to be good for long anyway. Time to send him packing, like trade him, send him on his way, and then... You know, last year before he got hurt, and then into this year, you know, he's had 400 plate appearances now, and he's generated more than 3 wins above replacement in those 400 plate appearances. That's a really good shortstop.
Who saw that coming? Not me. I was like you, sort of. I mean, I was really down on his hitting, but I wrote a piece for, I think, for Cincinnati Magazine after that terrible year. Saying, I think the title was actually In Defense of Zach Cozart, saying he's so good with the glove that if he can just hit a little bit better,
yeah,
this is a guy that's worth having in your lineup. If you bat him eighth and he gets back to, because he had pop early in his career and he just lost it for a couple years.
It's kind of the Billy Hamilton thing, right, where it's like you don't have to be great, you just have to hit good enough.
Yeah, exactly. And never did I expect him to. He's much better than good enough right now. You know, the .303 batting average, .332 on base percentage.
If he were homers all year long, he's a fringe MVP candidate.
Yeah, when you combine it with his glove, which, as I said when I talked to Bill Lack in one of our last podcasts, he's not missed a step defensively. I was afraid that that injury was so horrific last year. I was afraid he'd lose a step, but
his defense is really good.
It's been good, and but what do you do with the guy? He's 30 years old.
That's the question, right? And, yeah. You know, I think there was some chatter about this on Twitter today, I think because everybody's kind of thinking about the draft, and we'll probably get to that a little later. But, like, you know, I'm going to sound like a hypocrite here, and that's okay. I'm fine with contradicting myself. I contain multitudes and all that. But Cozart doesn't walk either. you know, his career walk rate is 4.7%. He's walking 4% of the time this year. Like, he doesn't walk either. But what he does do that Duvall doesn't do is make contact.
Yes.
You know, he's striking out at below the league average instead of way above the league average. And Cozart only strikes out about 13% of the time right now, which is much better than the league average. I was looking at all these numbers this morning for a column I'll have in a while. But it was, I think the league average right now is right around 21%. So he's making contact with the ball. And that's when I've spent all this time sort of delving into sort of low walk rate players and stuff like that. It's the one thing that's commonly shown up is that if you're going to generate value as a low walk rate player, you got to put the bat on the ball. And Cozart's doing that. And if he keeps doing that, I'm kind of, and you know, he's 400 plate appearances now of being a really good hitter. I'm kind of coming around to the idea that, you know, maybe you're like, hey, Zach, you know, how about if we extend you through maybe your age 34 season?
Oh,
and, you know, worst case, you know, well, he's got, looking at this, one more year of team control after this. And if he's, you know, his numbers right now have him at about a 4.5, 5 win player over a full season. There aren't too many shortstops like that.
No, there are not.
And the Reds don't have anybody coming through the system who everyone is sure can play shortstop. There's Peraza, who we'll talk about, but I think people are kind of mixed on him. And I can talk about why with that in a minute. But if Cozart is good for, say, you know, 3-4 wins at shortstop, keep him around. And he doesn't seem to me like the kind of guy who's going to, if he hits that point where he's not producing, where he's going to, like, lose his mind if you're like, okay, you know, you're our utility infielder now. You know, I think he probably would accept that transition if it happened. I don't know. I'm very undecided on Cozart. Should they trade him or keep him? I'm very on the fence. I want to hear what you think about it, actually.
Well, see, I never trust my opinion on these questions for reasons that will become apparent when we talk about Jay Bruce here in a second. Because it's just it's a matter of my heart and my head colliding, me trying to be analytical while also acknowledging that I'm just a Reds fan. And I get to, you know, you get to know these guys that are wearing the Cincinnati laundry and you grow attached to them a little bit. I'm still an 8-year-old kid in that respect. And so if they were to sign Zach Cozart, you won't hear me complain. I think there's an argument to be made. It's defensible. Probably if I'm in charge, I don't know that I'm still. You're right. We are right around 400 plate appearances.
Yeah.
That he's been awfully good. If he's, gosh,
well, it's long enough now that it makes you really think, doesn't it?
It does. Yes. It makes you think it's real.
It's 2/3 of a season, and because I'm a nerd, and this is what I do. I went and checked and see when all of his numbers, statistically speaking, stabilized. Because, you know, like, batting average is famously erratic. You need, like, more than a season's worth of numbers to figure out somebody's true talent on batting average. But all the important numbers, all the peripheral numbers that changed on him, the power numbers and the on-base numbers and stuff like that, they've all had enough time now to stabilize him, where over the course of those, you know, that sort of third of a season he got last year and the third of a season he's had this year, he's had enough plate appearances that it's legit. It holds.
Well, you know, he was 29 last year, and how many players become a real player at 29, or a real hitter? But he wasn't an awful hitter before those two terrible, terrible seasons.
You know, it was really just one terrible season. It was just 2014. I'm staring at his numbers right now. Like, 2012, 2013, he posted basically the same numbers. He was a little bit worse in 2013, but not really. You know, kind of right around 20% below league average, which for an elite defensive shortstop is fine.
Right.
But, you know, he just, and he hit okay in the minors, too. He wasn't a bad hitter in the minors. You know, kind of often old for the league, which you have to pay attention to, but Yeah, I don't know. I was already this year like, okay, he'll come out and he'll be kind of Zach Cozart and we'll trade him and it'll be fine. But he just kept doing what he did last year, you know, even a little better, as you pointed out. And it's just like, well, I don't know. Should they trade him? He's 30. You know, I don't like the idea of extending a 30-year-old shortstop.
Oh, no.
Right, but who else do they have coming? And, you know, I guess to kind of go along with that, you know, I'm one of these people. I can't really say I'm not, but you know, I think one of the things about being a Reds fan is you get tied up in money and salaries, right? And I think we sometimes forget what, like, the league, the sort of the going rate is, right? So, like, Brandon Phillips is not having a good year this year, but he's been declining for a while, right? But he's already made enough money that even if he's a replacement player contributed enough value that even if he's a replacement player for the next 2 years, he earned his contract, which surprised me when I actually looked at the numbers. But it's true. By the going rate, Brandon Phillips has already earned his contract that he signed with the Reds.
And I think a lot of us at the time thought, what a ridiculous contract for an aging second baseman. Yeah, he has.
And I did too. And so, you know, he signed that when he was, what, like 30, right? Around there. And so if Cozart, you know, you're not going to have to get, he doesn't have the track record that Phillips had, so you're not going to have to give him that much money. If you can extend him to 34 and, I don't know, I'm just throwing a number out there, say it's $35 million or $30 million, like, I don't necessarily mind that. I think that he's probably going to be worth that. And worst case scenario, he's a utility infielder for the last couple of years of it.
Yeah.
Of course, it's easy to spend somebody else's $30 million.
It is, but in the grand conversation, that's not a ton of money. I can't believe I'm saying that. I'd like to have it, but it's not a ton of money. And, you know, you can make a legitimate argument that he'll earn that if you believe he is who we've seen for the last 400 plate appearances. And every single day, evidence mounts that he is different. And
I mean, whoever thought that we would be approaching mid-June and Zach Cozart would have a slugging percentage of .532?
Right, I know.
it boggles the mind.
A slugging percentage 85 points or something higher than Joey Votto. No, I would not have expected that. So, and you know, he's a good representative of the organization. I think there's no downside to Zach Cozart right now. He's doing great, and I'm wishing him all the success he can have. And I would love to see him get that first All-Star game selection this year. I think it'd be a great reward for a guy that's been a pretty good Red, a better Red than most think, I believe.
I think so too. I think he's an underrated Red.
I do too.
And you know, also it's one of the people talk a lot about, you know, what's fun to watch. And I got into an argument on Twitter with somebody who was like, you know, walks are boring. And it's like, well, you know, walks actually kind of are boring, but great defense is not boring. And you know, Zach Cozart is not a boring player to watch. He's a fun player to watch. And you know, I am pro fun.
Absolutely. And in an alternate universe, Cozart's got a couple of gold gloves right now too. And maybe he's not as underrated because I think he's that level of, has been over his career, that level of shortstop.
I agree. I mean, it's just Simmons, you know,
yeah, like, exactly. What are you going to do?
You come along at the same time as the next Ozzie Smith, and that's okay. You know, that's bad luck on your part.
Exactly, exactly. Now, sort of a similar argument, I think, in a lot of ways, is Jay Bruce, and I don't know which way I fall on him either, but I think I may, I don't know. I think it's my heart getting in the way, but I lean on talking to him. I lean in the direction of saying, hey, is there some way we can get an extension done? He's just 29.
Boy, I'm right there with you. I love Jay Bruce so much.
Right. It colors the way we look at it, yeah.
On a personal level, like, you know, I happened to see his very first game with the Reds. And I live in Louisville, so it's not like I'm up there every day. And I saw him play when he was in Louisville. And, you know, he's just somebody who I got attached to very early on. And as a hitter this year, it's Jay Bruce. And so blah, 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 streakiness, blah, blah, blah. Right. But he's having right now the best offensive season he's ever had.
Yeah.
And he is still pretty young, right? He's 29. He's a year younger than Zach Cozart.
I know. It seems like he's been around forever, but still just 29.
And the issue with him, though, right, is defense.
Which has declined.
And visibly so. And the numbers agree.
Yes.
I mean, you know, I'm looking at his stat page on Fangraphs right now, and they have him, because of his defense, at basically a replacement level player right now. Like, he's reaching Adam Dunn levels on defense now.
Now, don't you go criticizing Adam Dunn on this podcast. I will not stand for it.
And now, I love Adam Dunn, and I know you do too, but I know you also know that when his legs went, they went.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
And it kind of, you know, but it's, I'm also looking at, I guess we should say, and I'm sure most people listening know that, that these defensive statistics are really unreliable over even season-long sample sizes.
Right.
You know, I think what I've seen is, I think, 3 seasons of data to have a really good sense, which by that point the player is aged, so who knows. And, you know, so the what it's looking like now, I mean, he would be having historically bad... if Jay Bruce is actually as bad as the numbers say he is right now, he would be having an historically bad season. He's probably not really that bad. You know, he's probably bad on the level he's been for the last couple of years. In which case, if he hits like this, and he's really not like, sorry, Adam Dunn when his legs fell off bad, then I just get kicked off Red Leg Nation.
Yeah, pretty much. I'm tearing up your contract as we speak.
If he's really just, you know, kind of had an especially bad couple of months or whatever in the field, then he probably is worth talking about extending. You know, he did have that wrist injury that we brought up earlier, that it kills your power for a while, right? Yeah. And, you know, the power kind of, he had that real bad slump at the end of the year last year, but a couple months in last year, his power just all of a sudden snapped back. And it's been there this year. So if he's going to be the old Jay Bruce with power, I don't know. I mean,
I think you could justify talking to both those guys and seeing if you can get a reasonable contract for both of them. I think with Bruce, the red flag is obviously defense.
I will say this. If we're talking, and I'm not talking about defense here, but purely from an offensive standpoint, if I'm trying to decide who I want to rely on in my outfield, I'm going to rely on Jay Bruce a lot quicker than Adam Duvall.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
I mean, because Jay Bruce is 2 years older than Adam Duvall. He's even a full 2 years older. I don't think he is. So less than 2 years older than Adam Duvall, and has, you know, almost infinitely more major league experience.
Two-time All-Star. Yeah, I mean, it's just not
yeah.
close.
And he's been a very good player for a lot of it. So I'm more confident that Jay Bruce will continue to hit despite these last two pretty rough years than I am that Adam Duvall will continue to hit.
Yeah, I think there are reasons to believe that he's a different hitter, and it may just be getting too excited over a good couple months. But I have a sort of similar story about when he first came up. We all were excited about him coming up anyway, number one pick, and just he was the second coming, I guess. Right after he was called up, and if you remember the first couple weeks, he just was tearing the cover off the ball, and
he destroyed the ball.
Yeah, and we actually happened to be in New York right after he came up, and I'm walking around Midtown, New York, and there are people. The Reds were in town to play the Yankees that week, and that's a reason why I planned my trip. I went to go see the Reds play at Yankee Stadium, and there were people walking all over the place wearing these Jay Bruce jerseys, you know, t-shirt. Yeah. Jersey, Jay Bruce, everywhere. I mean, it was just, and then, you know, they'd see somebody else and they'd yell at each other. And it was really just a strange thing that I've never forgotten. And so some of that excitement that Bruce brought early on.
And I'll tell you an early on Jay Bruce story. I don't know if you read this or recall it. I'm pretty sure, I'm 99% sure I'm remembering this right. But one of the ways sort of Jay Bruce found his way into my heart quickly is somebody asked him about his really hot start in the major leagues, and they asked what he attributed it to, and his answer was small sample size.
All right.
And it's like, good. You've got your head on your shoulders, kid.
Right. One of the reasons also why I'm fond of Bruce is that when he was in Louisville, as a matter of fact, actually, now that I think about it, he may have been at Dayton, but he gave us an interview for Red Leg Nation, and we really appreciated that. But so, you know, I think both those guys, Cozart and Bruce, I can make a good argument as to why the Reds should try to sign them. I can make an equally good argument that the Reds really need to try to sell high here and see what they can get that can help them on the next good Reds team. But if the Reds really truly believe, and this is what they've said, that they believe that in 2018 is when they think they can be, you know, competitive, whatever that means, can be competitive again. If that's the case, and you think in the next 2 years the Reds are going to be back to being a decent team, I think there's a pretty good chance that Cozart and Bruce can be valuable members of that next competitive Rez team.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that. And, you know, as we've kind of talked about, they also slot into places where there are kind of still some holes, right?
Exactly. And that was the point I was going to make, is that solves a couple of the problems that the Rez were going to have anyway. They're you know, they've got lots of spots they're going to have to fill. That would take two of them out of the equation.
Yeah. And, you know, I think I have been and still am, for instance, you know, a Billy Hamilton believer. I think he'll get it figured out. You know, when people gripe about his bat, I always tell them to go look at Ozzie Smith's first couple of years when he was Billy Hamilton's age. And he was just an abysmal hitter and turned himself into an acceptably decent hitter. And that's all Hamilton has to do. If he's within shouting distance of a league average hitter, he's an all-star.
Yes.
Because of his defense. But, you know, I also still acknowledge the fact that Billy Hamilton might not cut it long-term. You know, if he can't get the bat there and sustain it over a long period of time, then all of a sudden, if you've gotten rid of Bruce, then you're, I don't think Jesse, well, I can tell you, having seen him in Louisville, that Jesse Winker cannot cover enough ground to play all three outfield spots.
Not Billy Hamilton might be able to, but not, yeah, Jesse Winker. Yeah.
Jesse Winker has a good enough challenge trying to cover one corner right outfield spot. And I'm a Jesse Winker believer, but he's not gonna win beauty contests with his defense. Let's put it that
way. Well, Billy Hamilton, again, if you want to squint and we're trying to be optimistic, you look, he's just 25, and this year, for the first time in a while, he's so far a third of the way into the season shown real progress at the plate, in my opinion.
And so,
you know, I'm with you. There's a chance. I'm not 100% sold on him being able to really sustain anything with the bat long term. But,
you know, the thing I've always liked about Billy Hamilton is, and this is, initially this is going to sound weird, there is one aspect of him which reminds me of Joey Votto, which is that whenever he knows what he's not good at, and he'll talk about how he's trying to improve it. He doesn't have the talent, you know, he's not Joey Votto, he's never going to be Joey Votto good, but to have a player who is very much in the mold of, I want to work on my weak spots so I can get better, I'm a lot more comfortable letting those guys mature than the guys who kind of come up and are like, yeah, this is just what I do. And there are plenty of players like that. And, you know, if you're good enough, that flies. But I like that Hamilton is always willing to work on his game.
Yeah, absolutely. And he's been doing that since he first came up. You've been hearing him say things like that. And they were he sounded a lot like Joey Votto, I remember, early on in his first spring training. I remember hearing a couple of conversations with him. His first conversation after being handed a role in Cincinnati. So, he is reputed to be a hard worker. Who knows? He's, again, just 25. I'm not ready to give up on him.
I mean, he's got several years before those legs go, that's for sure. I mean, he's still, I watch him run and I still think that the speed is messed up on the video.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's he's just so much fun to watch it. And like we all say, if he could just get on base more, he's so much fun. Defensively, obviously, he's fun to watch, but running those bases is just a revelation, something none of us have ever really seen. And, I just wish he could get a chance to demonstrate that more. And he has this year a little bit. He's demonstrated it more. Higher on base percentage than your boy Adam Duvall.
Right? So. Yeah, I mean, that slugging percentage is lagging behind Duvall a little bit.
A little.
But, you know, even that, you know, that's something I was talking about not long ago. He has, I'm going to look here real quick, all of last year, and he was hurt some, so 412 plate appearances. Or no, that's at bats. How many plate appearances? 454 plate appearances. He had 15 extra base hits. He has 15 extra base hits already this year.
Right.
I mean, that's when it's June and you've matched your extra base hit total from the last year when you played most of the season, you have made some steps.
Yeah, pretty safe to say there's some improvement. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Fingers crossed. The only other guy that I wanted to really sort of talk about on the current team that we've not talked about, I promise it's not Caleb Cotham or Blake Wood. It's Dan Straley. And this guy, I love his story because he was traded after going through all the spring training with Houston. He was traded on March 28th to San Diego for a 35-year-old catcher, backup catcher. He was placed on waivers 3 days later where the Reds grabbed him. So that basically for free, grabbed him off the scrap heap. I don't think San Diego really wanted to lose him, but they were hoping to sneak him through and send him to AAA because he wasn't good enough to make the Padres opening day roster. Comes to the Reds grab him. He makes the opening day roster in the bullpen without ever having made a single appearance for the Reds. It's reported that the Reds front office hadn't actually seen him pitch. And they grabbed because they needed arms. They needed arms that were cheap.
And yeah, I mean, I was going to say, you know, look, in fairness, I've got a four-year-old son, and we've been learning about baseball lately. I think he might have enough of an arm for the Reds bullpen right now.
That's true. Like, that's true. It didn't take much, right? And now you turn around, Australia's been, you know, pretty good argument. He's been their best starter. He made three appearances in the bullpen, then moved him in the rotation. Yeah. Got a 3.34 ERA in 10 starts. And
yeah, and the peripherals aren't quite that good, but like overall, he looks like he's been about an average starter, major league starter so far.
And hey, I'll take that.
Right? Yeah, like, everybody will take that from the Reds right now.
Like you said about Mike Leake earlier, you know, even if you say Mike Leake is a league average pitcher, there's value in a league average pitcher. That sounds like a criticism to a lot of people. There's value in that.
No, I think, you know, the way I sort of finally contextualized it for myself was when I realized that Mike Leake was, you know, league average or maybe a little bit better than league average, and he was the Reds' fifth best pitcher, an average baseball team has a league average pitcher as their number three starter. So if you have a league average pitcher as your fourth or fifth starter, then you have yourself a pretty nice pitching rotation. You know, that's... Yeah, and
absolutely, no question. And, okay, is Straley going to be a Mike Leake for the next few years? Well, no. Okay, maybe not. Yeah. But can he be a good pitcher for this team for, you know, a few years? Well, the Reds have him under lock and key at very favorable terms for, I think, the next 4 years, I believe. Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe even longer.
That sounds right. I mean, you know, he's been up and down a bunch, so you'd have to look at the service time. But, yeah.
He's had options, but he – I think they've got him for 4 years. I believe that's what I saw when I was researching
it. That sounds right.
And so, you know, 27, that's another guy.
Yeah.
Plug him into the bullpen.
Or, and have him – you know, and you plug him into the bullpen, and he's – has a long history of starting, so he can be that swing guy where, you know, if something happens in case of emergency – bring him in, have him pitch four innings, and, you know, don't kill your bullpen.
Exactly, yeah. So, and he's a guy who has some pedigree. I mean, he was a decent prospect at one time, lost his velocity, worked with this driveline baseball group out of Seattle in the offseason, same group that Caleb Cotham worked with, who are sort of revolutionizing pitching, I think, if you really dig into it. And different drills, lifting weights, and all of a sudden his velocity's back to where it was before he started struggling. And you know, who knows? Yeah. He's a guy that can help this team, and he's barely making the league minimum now. It's just that's the type of things that have to work out as well, I think, for a team like the Reds to they need guys like that. And
you've got to find those guys, and you've got to find the kind of the guys who aren't being valued correctly, right? It's the everybody thinks that sort of Moneyball is just about statistics or whatever, but it's really just about who has a skill that nobody else is paying attention to that you can use. Grab that guy.
Yeah, allocate your resources in some of these places that are...
You can get him cheaper than you could get the same amount of value from somebody doing something that everybody's paying attention to.
Absolutely. Yeah, so, you know, that's a good story, and it's a guy that probably not a starter for the Reds long term, although he's been very good this year, but it's a guy that I think has a chance to be a really valuable member of this team for a few years, and that's good. Anybody else on the current Major League team you think we need to touch on?
No, not really on the current team. You know, I think we've kind of hit everybody who's, I think, worth talking about. It's not that long of a list, sadly.
What about the draft? Are we going to get Mike Trout or the second coming of Mike Trout?
No, I believe they're going to get the second coming of Joey Votto.
Okay, I'll sign up for
I'm
that.
I'm pretty sure that if they don't, Doug Gray, and this is a weird thing with the minor league system, but I think Doug Gray then has to shovel the stalls at Churchill Downs for 3 years.
Yeah, I'm not sure how that works, but I think that's right, yeah.
It's in his contract somewhere, I'm not sure. Yeah, no, I mean, you know, the I haven't followed it too closely, and I know you said you haven't either, because it is hard to pay attention. That I kind of wanted them to go with kind of an on-base percentage guy, as I do. Though I just happened to look over at Twitter, and apparently a source, it's not a confirmed thing, but is that the Reds are going to go after AJ Puck, and that may, you know, we'll know by the time you get this podcast up, we'll know who they've gotten, but we don't right now. So, you know, who knows? That's the kind of thing where you draft your player and you wait 3 to 5 years and then you see what you get.
But no, I don't want to hear about wait 3 to 5 years. If they draft AJ Puck, Twitter will melt down tonight because why are they drafting pitchers? They already got all these pitchers. They need to draft a position player. That's my imitation of the eggs on Twitter. So I hope you enjoyed that.
But I did.
But it will melt down. Are there any names that you say you're looking at on base percentage? Any particular names you'd like to see the Reds think about that number two?
I know his name when I look at it. This is how closely I followed the draft. It's the third baseman from Tennessee.
That's the guy I was going to ask about, and I can't remember
his name. Senzel, yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
That's the guy who, I don't know, I saw him as one of the guys the Reds were at least in the mix on. He's an on-base guy. I knew he was a great hitter.
Yeah, he's an on-base guy. I think I'm just parroting the stuff that Doug has written. Doug does a great job of covering the minors, but he's walked like twice as many times as he struck out. You know, the other hitters that I think were being looked at were much more sort of power-oriented guys. And, boy, there's just so much danger in drafting somebody based off the power tool, especially if they're striking out a lot. Because if you're striking out a lot in college, let's see what happens when you face pitchers with real breaking pitches.
Right. But, you know, maybe the flip side of that is he's in the SEC, which is a really good college baseball conference, and so may not be too far away from big leagues.
I mean, we've seen that before. I mean, we keep talking about him, even though he's not on the Reds anymore. Mike Leake certainly came up and provided value right away. You know, I mean, he was, you know, didn't spend time in the minor leagues until that one random start, I think his second year.
Yeah.
I mean, if he could come up, he would be a third baseman. The Reds probably need at least one more infield prospect if they're not going to go all in on Cozart.
Yeah.
You know, Blandino doesn't seem to be getting it done. We'll do a little aside here and say that I know people in Cincinnati have seen him a little bit, but I'm really excited about Jose Peraza. I think he's going to be very good for a while. The more I've watched, I'm more excited about him than I am about Winker.
Shortstop, second base.
At shortstop, when I've seen him, I'm not going to say he never makes a mistake because, you know, shortstop's a tough place to play, but very, very, very rarely does he misplay a ball. If he gets to it, he makes the play. He's got really good range to the second base side. His range is not as good to the third base side. And I think that's the area that scouts, I think, have an issue with. You know, does he have the range to play shortstop?
Right.
Definitely has the arm. He has a great arm. He has an excellent bat. And I know on Red Leg Nation, I got to interview him and asked him about his plate approach. And he has actually said to me out loud that he is working hard this year on changing his plate approach so that he's not swinging at everything and is sort of taking a more patient approach, which is all you can ask for. And I mean, I noticed it right away in seeing his at-bats that he was really, he was not a free swinger, which is what he was supposed to be. He was taking pitches, very rarely swings at the first pitch. And, you know, he seemed to really be waiting for his pitch date. He doesn't have a ton of power, but he is fast. He's kind of, think of him as Billy Hamilton, but not quite as fast, but with a fair bit more power, but still not anything you call real power.
Well, but, you know, that's exciting. That's, again, another place the Reds are going to have to. And I think they, based upon who they traded to get Peraza, I think the Reds were banking on him turning into a real player. So
And I think this might be a case, you know, for all the criticism that we gave the Reds organization, and I know that officially it's Dick Williams now, but Walt Jocketty's still up there hanging out. You know, Jocketty has been, in my opinion, kind of bad at free agent signings, but really good at trades.
Yeah.
Like, he just keeps winning trades, and he makes a trade, and you're like, I don't know about that one. And then 2 years later, you're like, that's a pretty good trade.
You know, at some point, there's a critical mass here where you got to say, he's consistently done very well in trades. And I'm thrilled with certainly the Mike Leake and Johnny Cueto deals last year. I think just turning, mm-hmm. look already looking like they're home runs.
Yeah.
Even though we love those guys, Cueto and Leake, if they had to be traded, I think he did a good job. So
yeah, sadly.
Sadly. Yeah, we could have a whole podcast, and maybe we will someday, just reminiscing about Johnny Cueto and what a great guy, what a great pitcher that guy was.
We would have to do the first video podcast for that, though, so we could show stills from his Instagram.
I don't want to – that's true, but if we did a video, I don't want people to see me cry. So probably not a good idea. Any other draft thoughts before we get out of here?
No, I don't know. You know, draft well, Reds. Draft well.
Please. please. You know, I don't really have too many thoughts either. I'm interested to see what they do, where they go, because it's a little bit of a glimpse into what they think, where they think they need to build a little bit within the organization. But on the other hand, so much of it is draft the best available that I don't know how much you can draw from. But it's always interesting.
And it really does make sense to draft sort of talent over need. You know, Doug Gray pointed out that there were a few years ago where the Reds drafted two of the top five best position players in the draft, and I can't even remember their names right now, which tells you something about the position playing talent in that draft.
I saw that. One of them was Drew Stubbs. I remember.
Stubbs, and then some. Yeah. That's right.
So unless it's somebody that you think is ready to step into the majors pretty quickly, probably doesn't make a whole lot of sense to draft for need.
Yeah.
Well, anything else you think we need to, any other dead horses we need to beat before we go?
I don't think so. I will say this. I think that things are about to get a lot better in Cincinnati. I think that I wouldn't be surprised to see them be a 500 team in the second half.
Right, yeah. I can handle that. I agree. I think it could. Let me ask you this, though. I'm looking at Cincinnati's baseball reference page, and would you have guessed that we'd be in the second week now of June? And, you know, at the top of the page here, they list the top 12 by baseball reference wins above replacement. So far in 2016, would you have guessed that the Reds, at any time, that the Reds' top five in wins above replacement would be number five, Brandon Finnegan, number four, Billy Hamilton, number three, Dan Straley, number two, Adam Duvall, number one, Zach Cozart?
No.
Isn't that crazy?
Never in 1 million years would I ever have guessed that.
And in the top 10, Tim Adelman.
Yeah. And that's for offense, kids.
What a world we live in. Oh,
yeah, but you know, it's I think we'll be fine. Joey Votto's coming around, so that's been nice to see. And it's not about this year. That's what we keep telling ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. And even though they've been terrible, I don't know. I'm still having fun talking about them. They're still as interesting and as entertaining as ever. So.
Yeah, and it's fun to look and not have to worry about the postseason. In a way, it's less stressful.
It's less stressful. Just enjoy.
It's just like, oh, let's see how are the kids doing today? You know, how's Hamilton doing? Look at the minor leaguers and see how they're doing. You know, how's Finnegan's last start doing? You know, that kind of thing.
I agree. Well, Jason, I really appreciate you coming back on the podcast here, and I'm going to count on you to get into the regular rotation here. This season and talk more, especially since you've had a chance to watch them in Louisville a little bit more often. Give us an update down on the farm occasionally.
Anytime, sir. I'm happy to do it.
All right. Well, I appreciate it. Listen, I really appreciate you guys downloading the podcast. Now you got a lot of things you could be doing with your time. You could be listening to Marty Brenneman or Jim Day. Instead, some of you are downloading the podcast and listening to it, and we really do appreciate that. Again, it's redlegnation.com. Every day, there's great stuff there every day. I hope you go and comment. The podcast, you can find us on iTunes. You can find us at redlegnationradio.com. But go on iTunes. If you like us, you know, give us a review, a like, a rating on iTunes. It helps make it more visible. It helps us move up the rankings if you review. As I always say, if you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. You can follow Jason on Twitter at Jason Linden, JasonLinden. That's right, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. You can follow me at Dotson C if you wanted to. I can't imagine why you'd want to. Follow us at Red Leg Nation as well on Twitter. Again, really appreciate you taking the time with us today. For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Before Shopify, were you wondering, where are my sales at? Now you're selling with Shopify, the global commerce platform supercharging your selling. You have no problem selling online, in person, on social media, and beyond. Gary, easy on the cha-ching.
Oh, sorry, but my Shopify sales are through the roof.
Start selling with Shopify today and discover how millions of businesses around the world use Shopify to ignite their selling. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen. Shopify.com/listen.